But it's a great treat to welcome in. Man, I say bowler. Everybody knows. Everybody, he's reached status of a one name guy, not Craig Bowler. I say bowler, the pride of Willow Springs, Missouri. I mean, it's a storybook hometown bowler. What do you remember of Willow Springs?
Oh, Willow Springs. Thanks, Tom. Good to hear from you, and thanks for the nice words. Willow Springs, Missouri, about a population of 2,000 and about 10. Last time I remember, I love the place. It's kind of, I guess it's a Griffith show so much, Mayberry, because
right.
Honestly, I think it kind of has a little bit of that that feel to it. Way down south in the corner of the southeast southern Missouri in the Ozarks, and granddad was a cattle farmer. My dad grew up there. I was born there. So did my mom. My dad, my other grandfather worked for the highway department, you know, putting in roads through the county. And we had a blast as kids, man. Just riding horses, doing a lot of fishing, crappie, bass, that type of thing. So I was fortunate. I really had a great time. It kind of came to an end when my grandmother passed way too early, but it was a great time. And haven't visited there for quite a while. Probably haven't been in that area for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, but it's a great place.
That's funny. The way you describe it sounds like Willow Springs would feel. And you were whistling the little Andy Mayberry thing when you go fishing and stuff, right?
I could just picture
you and your buddies whistling and, you know, maybe the Stand By Me scene on the train track.
Ooh,
all those things happening, right?
Yeah. You know what? That's a great movie. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that, but the scene that just makes, the big fella that has the, you know, he eats all the pies at the county fair, and and then he goes on from there at the Barforama.
That's a classic scene.
Yeah, there's a lot to that, man. A lot of woods, a lot of places to hide as a kid,
right.
And that's what you do. You just jump around, and nobody knows where you are. And when it was time to come home, I remember, up in the field, my mom would honk the horn 3 times, and that was the signal to get your tail home.
Yep. Well, it's funny you're detailing a fabric of life that I think unfortunately is forever gone. Especially in this age of mass media and kids have their life in their hands, literally. You know, all these things. I did the same thing. I'd stay away as long as possible. You know, I would go. I'd put my books in the milk crate. You know, the milk thing where the milk guy would put
in
the morning.
Yeah,
I put
right.
my books in there so she wouldn't see books. I grabbed my basketball. I was gone. I was gone up to the elementary school. For
That's
hours.
That's a great trick, man. Books in the milk can.
But
I like it.
Those are stories that are part of Americana that are gone. I mean, I say it wistfully because I wish our kids had some of these experiences, but life has changed so much that, you know, I'd like to freeze it and put my kids back into an easier time where there was less coming at them and they could just be kids. You know,
I guess that's what
all old men say, right?
Yeah, I guess so. You know what? Us old guys. And I'm sure my dad said the same
right.
back in our day, you know, but it's amazing how it just changes generation to generation. What's in and what opportunities, you know, are out there for all these young people to pursue. But it is. It's good, I think, to be able to step back in time a little bit. I wish more young adults had a chance to do that, but I'm fortunate. And you had, you know, that story is what it was about. It's like trying to get a ball game up. Anybody
yep.
in the neighborhood, and somebody saw somebody out.
Oh yeah,
and everybody would join in, and even some of the hot girls in the neighborhood wouldn't pass up that opportunity as well. So we were all excited as young guys to say, oh yeah, you can come out and play for a while, sure.
Sure. And try to avoid, you know, like the world. Now kids are embracing. They want to know what's going on around the world. And, you know, I hear my 13-year-old Shane, you know, he comes in and waxes political. I mean, he's plugged in a good way. But I'm like, dude, why don't you chill? Like, talk politics when you're 21, not at 13.
Isn't that something? That's amazing. Yeah. That little phone that's in their hand. My sons, a couple of them are home, and we were watching a special last night. I did not realize this, but the phone that we carry in our hands, the iPhone, has enough computer power, more computer power than what it took to get man on the moon.
Wow.
I mean,
that's
unbelievable. Just does a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy.
I mean, that's on History Channel. I mean, I don't know. You know, they say you don't believe everything you hear on TV, but that I thought that was a pretty right, straight up comment.
It makes you think.
Yeah, that's how powerful you know, the phone that we have, and you know, for what you and I do in our business, and for all of us. I mean, we can instantaneously get information that we need, or contact someone, or you know, get the latest scoop on sports, whatever it may be, and everyone is alerting everyone. I get, you know, Sports Center, all these alerts all the time.
Yeah.
Just like what's really going on. It's instantaneous. It's amazing.
Yeah. And yeah, I can't imagine life without that. But you know, it's just, you know, I wonder about when I was a kid, I didn't have these things probing me from around the world. My world was much smaller. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, there's obviously, you know, pros and cons. There's huge advantages, and they're plugged in and they can get knowledge, you know, like he asked me a question, I don't know, I go Google it, you know, that's
yeah,
I don't remember, Google it, you know.
You look brilliant about it. Give me 30 seconds, I'll have the answer for you. You look brilliant.
That's right. So we're at a pretty cool time for the Jazz, as I said in my my long intro. When you interrupt a guy like Craig Bowlerjack, it takes a while, because you're just you've done so many things in this community and immensely popular, but it's all because of what you do. It isn't because of anything well, it is what you say, but it's just your work ethic and the way you've approached your job for years. Everybody knows you and trusts you, and you're, you know, the hijinks with Harpring that's another level of entertainment we'll get to. But as you sit here, it does seem that the Jazz have shifted levels. It's not so much in the foundational work now. Now it's team building and trying to get the snipers and bring it, you know, it's specialization now, which sounds to me like, you know, they think it's about ready.
No, I would agree. I would agree, Tom. I thought, you know, the last 15 games of last season was really a kind of the mark that they wanted to hit, and that was playoff basketball. I really felt, and you cover the Jazz in highs and lows, this is going to be my, 11th year, and it's playoffs, just something we haven't sniffed around much.
Right.
And the last 15, 20 games of the regular season, I really felt that it was back. It was mm-hmm. back. There was an edge, an energy, even in the building. I loved it. It felt playoff basketball. It felt like the days. And again, I know that look, we just talked about us going back, or me going back to Missouri and you playing basketball and hiding your books in the milk cooler. And then people sometimes think that's cool, or they don't want to hear it, and they want to talk about, you know, the future, the iPhone and all that stuff. That's cool. But at the same time, when you start talking Jazz basketball, or even if you were in Green Bay talking about the Packers and then and now, and the Jazz then and now, you know, there's every generation has a story. And, of course, the Stock Malone era just is hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to beat. And, you know, that's what the memory is. And those are the stories that are being told to young fans today, man. Stock Malone. And the voice of Hot Rod that echoes through a lot of
sure.
fans' minds. I mean, those are glorious, great moments with some, you know, with a B. Russ and an Adam Keefe and a Big Dog Antoine Carr and a Greg Ostertag along for the ride. And, of course, the Hall of Famer, you know, Jerry Sloan.
Yep.
I mean, that's hard to beat. And Dennis Lindsay has done a yeoman's job of just deciding through the Miller family to let's redo this, rebuild a core by not overpaying and handcuffing this franchise financially, and then we'll pay when the time comes
right.
to players that are going to actually be a part of this community and a part of this franchise. The process is ongoing, but I think you're spot on about it's close. And I think the acquisition of George Hill with the 12th pick in that three-team trade is a big statement. I think it was a statement to Hayward, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
No, I really do, and I think that's probably is another topic. But, you know, there was a lot of talk that Hayward was unhappy and the Jazz were peddling him, and I think what Phoenix offered Eric Bledsoe in a pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and you know, that comes up, and I think the Jazz took care of that. Hayward, from all indications, is still very focused on what needs to be done here. But, look, when you have a core like the Jazz, tough decisions have to be made, and right now they're going to be in the process of trying to find those pieces. And I saw Tony Jones's article this morning, you know, about Solomon Hill
yeah.
from Indiana. there's going to be a lot of names that pop up here in the next 24 to 48 hours and what the Jazz want to do. And the money, and here, and the other thing is for Jazz fans to know, the Jazz are a player. They have money to spend if needed. And so I think, you know, you hear about the Durant, why aren't we going after Kevin? Well, it just doesn't fit. That's just not what the Jazz are going to do. There's some pretty solid free agents out there, but again, it has to fit the puzzle piece, and it has to fit also the chemistry of what Dennis and Quinn Snyder are building right now.
Right, right. And Gordon is such an interesting thing here. I mean, a lot of, you know, personally, he finally gets the dream. He's offered a spot on the team going to Rio, the Olympic team, but his wife, they're expecting their second child. That's a no-brainer. You know,
right.
You can't go, especially, you know, with all, everybody knows what's going on in Rio with Zika, and it's, I mean, the golf tournament there had chances to be great. A lot of the guys aren't going, and but for Gordon, the situation wasn't going to be different. He, you know, I know he got into some trouble or caused some angst when he said during the season that, yeah, when he opts out, he's going to look at where the Jazz are. I mean, it's a no-brainer. He's going to say, where are they? What are my options? It still seems like this is his best option, and if they continue to build it and make themselves better every year and address concerns he has, I mean, why would you not? Why would he leave for less money? And, you know, maybe there's another option. Maybe he thinks he can play deeper with another team. But some of the things he had said in over the past many months would be standard anyway when he is going to opt out, leave a lot of money on the table to sign for even more money. That's another thing fans have to get used to. The money they're going to hear here in the next year is going to be absolutely, you know, Gordon's going to make like in the 30s per year. No matter where he is.
You just said something that I think most fans just, you know, nearly, you know, spin their car out of control. And I hope they don't, obviously. But I'm just saying it makes you jerk the wheel a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's Monopoly money. I feel like it's like when we, you know, we open up game night and you just spin the bank. I'm the banker, right? You're the banker. How much you need, Tom? I'll take 30 tonight, 30 mil. And it's just little paper money. But it's true. I mean, what TNT and ESPN – and what they bargain with the NBA for rights fees, it's really hard for the average fan to grasp, and I sure understand that, and I hope the players understand that too, Tom. That you know what, the responsibility does grow even higher. Now,
yes.
Look, if you can't take the heat, then you got to get out, but you're not going to, because who's going to turn down 30? But the bottom line is, if you're a max player, you know, there's responsibilities that go along with that, and incredible pressure that you have to learn to deal with, and
right.
That is social media. There's never going to be a real friend that's going to agree with every play you make on a given night. And believe me, that's, you know, Gordon heard his course of concerns last year. He's a max player. Those are things that come with the territory. So I think it's only going to get more. Let's just say, I think fans are going to become even more vocal, because when they see those numbers, they're going to expect even more.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's hard because, you know, the players are naturally the ones who are going to catch all the heat, you know, signing for this kind of money. But it's a function of overall prosperity in the league, and the players are, you know, are the league with proper management and all that. And now I'm hearing, you know, you've heard the same things. I mean, this $90 million per team they were supposed to get is more, you know, it's going up. It may be more like $100 million per team at the end of next season. I mean, so teams have it. The salary cap's going to go up because the players get their percentage, and it's just the numbers we have to get accustomed. I mean, what's Steph? What is LeBron? I remember hearing a year or two ago about LeBron being the first $50 million a year guy in the NBA, and, you know, you scoff at it then, but not so much. Not now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, when a lot of fans have asked during our broadcast careers have said, well, when does it stop?
Right.
I don't know.
I know.
I thought it would have stopped by now. I thought the ceiling had been hit, but obviously that's not the case. I do know this, in my experience, and you've had experience at the network level, Tom, is that, you know, there's only so much of the pie you can cut out of it, and I know that from my experience, and we all have read the headlines, ESPN has made some drastic cuts with pretty high-level talent. Fox, where I was at, has done the same. They actually gave most of their employees an early buyout option. And what that tells me is that, of course, they're not real comfortable with what they've had to do to stay in business. And so they're cutting, and basically what we used to know as these network television guys that it's slowly being whittled away. And what I mean by that is, as fans, you're going to get the product. But, again, it's more, I guess I like to call it cookie-cutter stuff.
Yeah,
is that
right.
There's really going to be no flash. You may not know who's calling the game, and maybe you don't care. In the day, that was kind of the big deal was, you know, Howard and Dandy Don and Giff were all about, you know, that was a show. But now it's like, give me the game, boom, next one, boom, next. So it's like a production line. And they've had to cut so many costs. And I know a lot of guys in the business like you do who have been put on hiatus because they're just trimming it down to the bare bones because, again, in my opinion, of the rights fees that have been promised and contracted to most of these major league teams and even college football. I mean, let's be honest, that's another
unbelievable
barrel of cash that is being produced right now.
Yeah, and with more in the offing, you know, you add another layer of playoffs. We're not going to get into that. I mean, we can go on and on. I mean, you know, there's more money to be made. But you're right. It is causing, you know, the network world to really decide, well, we're paying rights fees, but we're not going to pay all this, you know, what they would call fluff. You and I would call just quality production value and
right.
covering all bases and making sure you give the viewer everything. But
right.
I think they understand that the viewer is, they don't need to please them anymore because they got the product, right?
Right. No, it's true. And you know what? Again, you may not watch the game live. Again, the iPhone, you can dictate when you watch. Or you may only want to watch the highlights, and so you go to that. And how many guys do you know and women that are actually in a bar or a restaurant situation, the volume's down anyway, and they're just there to watch and keep, you know, really what's important is just give me the score.
Yeah.
And that's what I've seen over the last 10 years is how that's changed as well. So
But let's be honest, you and Maddie, you guys are cutting, you're fighting that. Because you guys have come up with your own corner of the entertainment industry on top of the broadcast. You and Matt have taken it to another level in the last year or two. I'm not sure there was a conversation you guys had or Travis gets involved. I don't know who told what happened, but all of a sudden he's wearing this aluminum on his head. And you guys are, I mean, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful, you guys have become a partial comedy team in the middle of a blowout. I mean, it's fun. And,
yeah.
and you guys have understood that it's growing and we're going to have fun here.
Well, you have to have fun, but you have to be professional at the same time. And that's what I've had to try to convince Matt. You know, Matty is a guy that just comes up with these crazy ideas. I just look at him like, are you kidding me? Really? And so he'll do some funny stuff. He'll eat Vegemite.
Oh, that is awful.
Joe Ingles came by and dropped off a couple of jars to us. And you know,
was he mad? Was Ingles mad at you guys?
I don't know. Have a Vegemite on me, and you know, there's a lot of crazy things. Matt is, if as a player, we all remember him, you know, as the bully chest big guy who was going to come out and take no gruff, and he didn't. And in basketball, you know, after talking to him in the locker room, and then now working with him, you know, he prepares, and I hope fans know this. He really does prep
right.
big time, and that's what makes a good analyst from former player, and I've worked with a lot over the years, and that some last have been. I've had guys last 5 or 6 games, and all of a sudden they disappear because they don't understand what work it takes.
Right.
You can talk about how good you were for only so long, and then you have to start talking about the other guys on the floor, and that's what Matt does, I think, really well. But then getting back into his comedy shtick, you know, I didn't realize that he had that side to him.
Right.
And he likes to cause me a lot of turmoil in my life. So I just have to try to play along with it. I'm probably a little more edgy on the side of let's get it done the right way, but he likes to mess with me and
yeah, he tries to pull you down, but you have standards. You don't ever stoop. And
try not
you know,
to.
It's funny, but no, it's good stuff because you understand when it's game time, when it's last, you know, 30 seconds and it's the timeout, you guys are into the, you know, what's going to happen and you get it, but you know, sometimes you're going off to break and there's a crazy cutaway or something, and then leave it to Matt. He'll hang you out to dry, right?
Well, of course, he knows everyone in every arena,
right.
and every Jazz fan is his best friend, and that's the thing that he likes to plug and bug me about, that he came to the arena 3 hours early. I didn't, and he shook everyone's hand. See, he's just a politician doing
Absolutely.
His work. That's
Absolutely.
What he's doing.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about free agents, who might be out there. Who does Bowler like as we continue the conversation with the voice of all time, the jazz guy, and going now and going forward, Craig Bowlerjack with us here for the remainder of the show here, next another half hour. Craig Bowlerjack, stay with us. TK, Morning Drive here on ESPN 960. Don't go anywhere. TK here on ESPN 960. It is 8:36. A few more minutes with Craig Bowlerjack. We're locking him down because we appreciate his insight. Before we get back to the Jazz and some of the free agents, I just wanted to kind of throw this thought out to you, Bowler. It struck me that the among many things, the recent hiring of Kalani Sitake as BYU's new head football coach has seemed to have maybe muted some of the, you know, this rivalry hatred, or just a lot of the bad blood. We all know Kyle and Bronco weren't buddies, to say the least. And then you see Kyle and Kalani, you know, talking at a golf outing, and all of us, you know, obviously there's deep history and friendship and respect, professional and personal there. And I mean, this has a way, not that, you know, I love rivalries. I love the Florida States, the Clemson, South Carolinas, all those, you know, inner, you know, Oregon State. I love that BYU Utah angst. I love the little bit of the tension, but it has gotten out of hand. And is it a sense maybe that the Sitake hire has, not the design of the hire, obviously, but that the practical reality is that this rivalry got a little nicer, if I can say that.
Yeah, you know, first, hello, Utah County. And
yeah, right, exactly.
That's awesome. I mean, I spent a lot of time down there
at
Lavelle Edwards Stadium. And you know what's funny is Kalani, you know, and Kyle, both Cougars, right? So it's and I got to know Kalani even better when calling some games on Fox.
Yep.
Well, right after, you know, Utah jumped into the Pac-12. And quality guy, Tom, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just quality guy. And Kyle, intense, quality guy. But yet the pressure has been on him to take that program to the next level in the Pac-12 conference. And obviously BYU has hopes, let's be honest, that they want to make a jump into some conference someday sooner than later. But right now it's independent. So you make a great point. There was not a lot of love between Cougar and Ute fans. And you know what? I think it kind of goes back, you know, really to the head coaches about what their relationship is and then how fans react to both those men. And let's jump back even a little further with Mac, McBride, and Lavelle. I mean, that was some classic moments of just crazy friendship, competitors indeed. But when they started doing commercials and the dream effect of, you know, 33, 31, I think it was, you know, and the way that Utah had made a move, and instead of being the doormat of that rivalry, they became a player. And Lavelle had enough confidence and respect in his program that he was able to handle it. And I think that Kalani is going into a fine situation where BYU, and I think their fans are also kind of back on board. I think there was a real split. I could be wrong, but from all indications, and Tom, I'm sure you know you're tuned into this, is that I just didn't feel that Bronco, he had lost some of the fan base in the sense of some of the comments he had made.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed uncomfortable for him.
Yeah,
and it was uncomfortable for Kyle as well. And you know what? The break, probably I didn't like it. But at the same time, you know, now with a new coach and kind of a new way of doing things, I think the rivalry is going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, basketball aside, they have their own issues.
Right.
With, the you know, whatever Coach Rostoviak's, you know, his concerns are. But, you know, they're back playing, hopefully, for a while. But, yeah, it's clear the friendship, I think, does sort of, you know, flow past just their relationship. People see them talking, and I think people did feed off the fact that, you know, Bronco didn't like Utah and didn't like Kyle, and, you know, they never really made an attempt to make it better.
No.
And the fans are always, you know, there's going to be that bottom 5% of, you know, who are always going to take it and run with it, and then it gets nasty, and then Max Hall happens, and so forth and so on. But it's nice that you sense that too. This You know, I don't want to ever have the, you know, blue and red love each other. I mean, I want a rivalry. We all want that. But, you know, you got to just got to there has to be a respect at the bottom.
Absolutely. And I know both of these coaches, by the way, I think both schools are in good hands in the sense of how dedicated and the competitors that they are. I think you knew that when they played the game at the college level and how much respect they have for both schools. And obviously, let's be honest, Kyle has respect for Brigham Young. I mean, that's he has a lot of history there with family and himself, and Kalani has a lot of respect for Utah because, again, he coached there. It's really it's an interesting dynamic, and I just think that, you know, they're able to balance it. They get it. They know that the programs are both solid, and they recruit against each other. But you know what? You just mentioned some of the great schools around the country. That's what makes this whole game the craze that it is mm-hmm. because fans – are fanatical, and they want their team to win, but yet also they're tuned in at the competition, what it takes to be in college football. It's difficult to do. Nick Saban seems to have the formula pretty well in hand, but, you know, it's Alabama, too. I guess that does help a little bit.
For sure.
But, you know, BYU, look, I mean, people always ask me this when I travel and do games. Tell me about BYU, and they want to know, like, is it like this, is it really as tough as they say it is to play there? And I said, look, you know, there's an honor code. And yeah, kids get in trouble. And they get in trouble at Auburn, Alabama. They get in trouble at Northern Arizona. Mm-hmm. You pick a school and you've got issues. That's what happens when you put 100 young men together.
Yep.
You're going to have issues. And it just becomes more, you know, in the media's eye when something hiccups at BYU. So, look, it's never going to change. I mean, the code is the code, unless they, you know, can figure out, you know, some ways to ease it, or maybe, you know, the players will get second chances. And I think some of them do. It depends on the severity of what happens, and so that's a whole nother hour that we can
right.
discuss honor code. But you know, I think BYU solid program. It is well respected around the country, and I think it'd be foolish if one of these conferences, whether it's you know, Pac-12, Big Ten, Big 12, doesn't find a way to bring that university into the mix. When I think of big time college football, I think of BYU because of the stadium, the facilities they have, the crowd. By the way, their fan base in Utah, look, has done the same thing. Great facilities, up their attendance at Rice-Eccles Stadium. They're in a power conference. They've beaten some of the best, and they've got a good, strong coaching staff that I think both these programs are going to be around and battle each other for a long time.
Yeah, no, well said. And you know, for Cougar fans, it's a tough time now because while Independence and this schedule is great, it's tough on a team and on a coaching staff to have this kind of a schedule in the middle of a college, you know, program. And is it sustainable? Like Bronco on his way out said, it's not. And I want to put him into a nice conference, big conference. Maybe they'll be one of the when these conferences go to those 16s. You know, I'm sure BYU would be part of that. But this limbo has got to be difficult for the fan base. Meantime, you know, they got to play on. Before we let you go, I want to come back to the Jazz here and just give me an idea. I think. You know, it looks like they're set at point, and I think they got big. If Bowler could get into the free agent negotiation, you'd like to have your hands in that pie of millions to be able to dole it around. Who would you like to bring? Not who, but give me the kind of a guy you think, and maybe it's more. I happen to think it's a couple of guys, and maybe shooting and so forth. What do you think the Jazz need?
Well, they're loaded at point in guard play, as you know, and I think they're going to have to, and they will, combo some sort of a player deal to move for either a draft pick or other players, Tom. I mean, there's seven, I think, guards right now on the roster.
Yeah. Right.
And so they're not going to carry that, probably do the original, you know, 3 point guards, and who will that be? It's going to be interesting bringing in Shelvin Mack. You pick up the option on Trey. He didn't play much at all in the second half of the season. And then Raul Neto showed, I think, Jazz fans and even just the front office that he was a little tougher mm-hmm. than people expected. So I think they've got a lot of options there. And, you know, I talking to Quinn and Dennis at the end of the season and on flights, you know, you just kind of wander up and down the the aisle and just kind of throw out ideas. And I think the bottom line is that you still you have to compete in the West, especially. Tom, it looks to me like you have to become a better three-point shooting team,
right?
And just have that ability to bring a guy off the bench. I think bench depth is probably now the focus. The starters most likely are set unless they crack or decide to break up part of that core. And you know, that's Dennis's deal. There's some talent on that team. Have they achieved the level of what the expectations are? Not sure. Can they grow? That's hard to say. I'm speaking of the two guys, especially in Hayward and Favors, because look, Tom, they're in their seventh year, coming into their seventh
right.
year. That should be, as you know, prime time basketball between now and their 12th year in the league. These next 5 years should just be absolutely at their absolute height of their career. So, you know, again, Dennis has to evaluate, have they achieved it? Can they still get better? Have they hit a ceiling? And that's what he gets paid to do. Now, if they crack the core and decide to bring in another starter through free agency or through some sort of a combination of trade, we'll see. I don't sense that possible. They do have money to spend, and they could be a quiet but yet aggressive, you know, a team in the free agent process. Look, if the Millers have given them the thumbs up to make this team a winner and playoff bound again, then Dennis is going to get it done, and they've got the money to do it.
Yeah, some of the guys you know, we hear Solomon Hill, another Hill from the Pacers is a guy maybe in their crosshairs. Marvin Williams, a former Jazz guy who's done nothing but improve his stock going to Carolina.
Wow, he played well, didn't he?
Yeah, and he now, you know, they, like you mentioned, shooters. Well, he's a great catch and shoot, a great 3-point shooter now, and a veteran who can defend. And the other thing I like about the George Hill pickup is, you know, he can defend with Dante. That's a really, really tough backcourt defensively, and he can shoot an open three, so he'll space
right.
you out that way too.
Right, and you know what? That you just said the magic word, space. And that's where Gordon Hayward works better.
Yep.
His ability to get into the lane and get bumped seems to frustrate him. And, again, the calls haven't come his way. And I to be a 20-plus point night for guy in this league, I mean, look at LeBron. What's he do? What does a James Harden do? What does Steph Curry do? They get to the free throw line.
Right.
And that's one thing. Some nights there's the inability for the Jazz to get there, or when they get there, as you know, there's been some make one, miss one type of nights, and that one that comes to mind is the Clipper game when they came here with half their team.
Oh, yeah. Oof.
And the Jazz, you know, again, it's a learning process. I know fans get tired of that, but it has to hurt sometimes to lose to understand how good it feels to win. And so you got to hope that this past season, as close as they came, the Jazz are on their way to being a player. Now, look, the West is tough. And no telling who's going to reload. San Antonio obviously wants to be a player with Durant, and that would just, come on, Tim Duncan.
That's unfair.
And then you bring Durant. Give me a break.
Or Golden State. That's
or
flat
Golden
out
State.
Unfair.
That's ridiculous. So the Jazz know what they're up against, but at the same time, injuries play a factor around the league, and you just have to be in the mix. And then you just say, okay, let's see what happens. And look what happened. Cleveland knocked off what we thought was the mightiest team in the NBA. If you played them again, it'd probably be a different outcome with a little healthier Steph Curry. But LeBron willed the Cavaliers, I think. He wanted that win not only for himself but for the city. And it takes the heat off of him. And I think the days of criticism, whether or not you like the way he handled his first departure, and I'll raise my hand there, taking my talents to South Beach, but he came back and, you know, he actually delivered on his promise.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you're running out of things to criticize, and I've been a skeptic for in the early part of his career too. I was a show me, like, you know, Missouri guy, but he's shown everybody and he's done everything. And I think he led every statistical category in the finals. It's never been done. I mean, he's done some amazing things. But it also struck me. You mentioned Gordon not getting calls, and how many times have we seen him go down the lane, get battered, make a layup, look at the ref, laugh, going down court? It's
right.
It's become part of the Hayward look that the
it is.
Like he's just incredulous. And then you see Steph Curry at the highest level, in my opinion, Like Kerr said, he's the MVP. Where are the calls?
Right. Isn't that amazing? It's amazing. You can't win if you're an official. But I will say this, and I try not to look at it through, you know, the old rose-colored glass routine. But I sit in my chair and go, wow, you know, and heartbreaking.
Your view is incredible. You see this, and you're wondering, what are these guys doing?
He's hammered. He goes to the locker room, and we kind of kiddingly keep count. Like, I have three tonight, and make it four, he'll say, you know, and
really?
Just have some fun. But hey, look at my left arm. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing that I think the league ought to look at is fingernail length. How about that? How about that as a new rule? I've never seen so many cuts.
I know.
And scratches.
That's so true.
In the league, man, it is unbelievable. If you really get, and fans, I'll tell you, those who watch, you know, it's hard. But to go into a locker room and see the aftermath of some of these games. Like, how'd you get that cut down on the calf?
Wait, is that a glass
guy
cut?
Yeah, digging for a loose ball, and the guy about ripped my calf off, you know? But it's, Hayward's got some battle scars, Favors too, and it's rough down there. And that's just the way the game's played.
Bigger impact on this team coming back, is it Gobert really stepping up and becoming an offensive force, or is it Exum arriving with an offensive game and feeling comfortable? I know they're nice problems to have.
Yeah.
But what is more important for you for this team to become eventually relevant in the West, playing in May and June?
Boy, Tom, you hit on probably really the two biggest question marks that the Jazz are going to have to deal with. I think that's why George Hill's here, is to make the transition for Dante a little smoother, and not the expectations of him to be hit the floor at 100%. It's not going to happen. Anyone who's had a knee injury knows, I think it takes time personally to first take a hit, understand what it feels like to go down, and say, I'm okay. And that's going to be really, I think, the mental part of it for Dante. The skills will come back, but I think it's the mental thing, and to trust yourself, to trust the cut, to understand you can still plant the leg and you're going to be okay.
Right.
And so that's the most important thing for him. And for Rudy, great one, Tom. I mean, he could be the total key in the sense of protecting the rim with Favors, but also, can he be an offensive threat? I think he has the potential to be 12, 14 a night if he improves his free throw shooting. And also, he's going to be a 10, 12 rebound guy, just because of where he is on the floor and how big he is, and he's going to probably block three shots.
Right.
But he can improve himself offensively and help the Jazz, as you said, open the floor more if he can not only take off those offensive rebounds, but actually step out a bit, and also if he can do a sweeping hook shot through there with his size. And I know he's working on both. And I'll throw a third factor in here too real quick. I think Alec Burks' health is going to be a huge if he stays healthy, a huge plus for the Jazz, because he'll also be a major player off the bench, and he's one of those guys that Quinn trusts, and he'll close games out in the fourth quarter. But I think also he's got to stay off the floor, and what I mean by that is he just can't keep doing the tumble act.
The kamikaze thing is bad on your health.
Pick your poison, right? And
yep.
Then develop, and what I watched him when he was rehabbing this past season a lot, both prior to games, was he was working on the jump shot. He wants to have that 15-foot range where he can drive and then pull up and say, not this time. And all that does is help open up the baseline for him even more and probably lessens contact. But right now, he's missed 106 games over the last 2 years, Tom. And, you know, for a young guy, that's a lot.
That's too much, yeah.
He's had surgery, hopefully repaired, and he's healthy. Right. I'd love to see him play at least 75 games and see what he can do.
No doubt.
With this coaching staff and with this style of play that he brings.
Bowler, we could go on for hours and hours. There's 10 more questions I don't get to. It's been a great thrill to get to know you in the market here. Thank you. You were great when I first got here. I tell everybody you made my transition to Utah really smooth. I appreciate all the insight. And thanks for being a loyal contributor throughout the time here. Continued success in your great career. Keep it up. And we'll stay in touch. And I want to take a minute also to thank John LaFollette, who's produced this show just really, really well. And we've forged a good relationship. John, thank you so much for my time helping me here. Bowler, go have a great summer. We'll stay in touch, and I'll be in talking to you from Rio or Madrid sometime soon.
Well, I just want to tell fans, too, we'll miss you. You've done marvelous things here in your time. And, you know, I always wanted to give you space over there at that other building there at KSL, and you did your thing with
Hey, you built it. You built an empire. We couldn't screw it up.
We just, and then you had to deal with Zundel after I left. So, you know, but I wish you well in your new adventures and in Madrid. And, you know, you've got great connections with the Olympic Committee around the world. And I think it's going to be a great, like you and I talked the other day, just a recharge in your career. And I wish you well, my friend.
Thank you so much. Again, it's about the relationships in this business, and I've really appreciated getting to know you. You're great, but, well, by the way, for people to you know, if there's a role model, Bowler would be a great one for, what did your dad say, preparation, poise, and?
And performance.
Performance.
Those are the three P's
awesome.
That he hammered into my head, you know, if I try to live up to that. But look,
all right.
I get hammered. And hey, look, you know what social media is about. We get a visit or two there every day, so.
Yep.
You know, fans are fanatical, and I love them, and it's a fun business to be in. We're very lucky.
Absolutely. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much, Bowler. Talk soon.
All right, Tom. Thank you.